You are listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason Anthony McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salivary.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Peltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to Full Contact Fighter Radio. I am your host, Kelsey Mowat, coming to you from a very snow-covered and freezing Vancouver, British Columbia, and joining me from a city that's all well too familiar with those types of conditions, Mr. Brendan Lear from Edmonton, Alberta.
How are you, Kelsey?
Not bad, man. It seems like every show now that we're introducing it with weather talk, but from the West Coast perspective out here, it's pretty crazy what's going on. Even in my weekly column that I just sent in, I made note of the fact that any Americans that might be heading this way or other mixed martial arts fans from Canada, wherever, for the Bodog fight finals this weekend might be quite surprised, or maybe they won't be, because Vancouver just looks like the stereotypical Canadian city right now. It's snow everywhere, it's like -5, and that rarely happens here. Usually in Vancouver you get snow maybe once a year and it's melted within a few hours, so whole city's shutting down, buddy.
Yeah, the great thing about Vancouver is when it snows, the whole city shuts down for a good week.
Yeah.
All the cars crash, and basically it comes to a standstill.
Well, there's only a few snow plows in the lower mainland region, so right now, because it gets, you know, the snow kind of melts because of the driving, etc., so right now the streets are pretty icy because it's below zero. So
I think the show has had a sort of apocalyptic theme because of your bed bugs and the frogs raining from the skies.
Right.
So I think we should keep some kind of chart of the signs of the apocalypse, and I think this show will be the basically the arbiter of when the apocalypse is going to happen. We're getting emails from the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
Yeah,
I know something's up.
It's very strange. It's very strange.
Maybe Mel Gibson's right making this movie, this apocalypto movie.
Yeah.
Maybe the Mayans are right. Isn't it? Aren't we basically done by the end of the Mayan calendar? When is that?
No, 2012.
Come out right away, isn't it?
I think it's 2012.
Hmm?
I think 2012 is the date the Mayans said.
God, I hate when the apocalypse stretches out. Why did it just happen instantaneously? What a pain.
Well, you know, as far as apocalyptic events going on, I don't know how I'm trying to say it this way in MMA. This is the problem. We get into MMA always on some haphazard segue after discussing the weather and stuff.
Basically, our entire canon of shows have been strings of non sequiturs.
Exactly.
So don't worry about it.
We've got Marcus Davis coming on the program today. He's going to be taking on Shoni Carter at the upcoming UFC Fight Night, December 13th. So he'll be coming on the program. And then we've also got Peter Martel, who's one of the promoters for Extreme Cage Combat, which is a event out of Halifax, Nova Scotia, so the other side of Canada. And they've got an event this weekend as well. So he'll be coming on the show to break down the card a little bit for us and fill us in on the Maritimes mixed martial arts scene.
Any other signs of the apocalypse? Email us. And we'll keep close track.
All right, stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Everyone has that line that you just can't cross. No matter how mad we get, we're told to turn the other cheek and communicate our feelings. December 2nd, live on pay-per-view, we'll see some things are worth fighting for. Bodog Fight, USA versus Russia. 8 members of Team USA will face members of the legendary mixed martial arts team, the Russian Red Devils. Plus, super fights, Gracie versus Waterman, Silva versus Pele, and Alvarez versus Riley. Live on pay-per-view or visit BodogFight.com for more details.
The best offer MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter Shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it, that classic FCF logo on so many great items, like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NHB corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch, all your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter, and joining us now on the program is Mr. Marcus Davis, who is going to be taking on Mr. International Shoni Carter at the upcoming UFC Fight Night, December 13th. And Marcus, how are you doing, and how was your Thanksgiving weekend so far?
I'm doing really well. Thanksgiving weekend was great. I had 2 days of Thanksgiving. So I made sure that I died enough so that I could actually enjoy Thanksgiving a little bit. So.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because we had Luigi Fioravanti on the program late last week, and he was kind of bemoaning the fact that he was going to be heading to Thanksgiving dinner, wouldn't be able to eat too much. So it sounds like you planned ahead.
Yeah, I did. I was well prepared. So.
No, even pumpkin ready. Pie, even prepared enough to have a couple slabs of pumpkin pie?
Yeah, well, actually, I don't eat pumpkin pie, but my mother did make peanut butter frosted brownies.
Nice.
So I did have a couple of those. Not Sweet. Too many, but a couple of them, and plenty of turkey and roast and my favorite potatoes. I had the sweet potato pie, and I had it all. So.
Making me jealous, man.
I think the interesting question is, what does Shoni Carter have to eat for Thanksgiving? Yeah. Well, I don't know. You know, I can tell you this. From what I hear about his work habits, there's no way that he's been working as hard as I have been. And, the only reason why I was able to enjoy the old Thanksgiving dinners was because of how hard I've been working. So I'm looking forward to this fight.
Yeah, and let's get into it. Of course, as we mentioned, you're taking on Shoni Carter. And my first question for you, Marcus, is Shoni, of course, was just on the last season of The Ultimate Fighter. So you probably got to see a lot of that, or I'm guessing you've heard a lot about his performances there, etc. Is there anything new in Shoni Carter's game based on that? That you see, Marcus, or is it and how are you formulating your game plan to take on Carter?
Well, as far as you know, what he did on the show, I don't think that matters. I really don't care what Shoney's done on the show, and honestly, I really don't care what Shoney's done in the past. It's irrelevant. What I do think, and from what I do hear, is that he thinks he's just looking beyond me. That he doesn't take me serious, and that I find that insulting. And come that night, I'm telling you this right now: Shoni Carter will not make it to the end of that fight. He's not going to, not with me. He will not make. There will not be a decision on this fight.
What do you mean? You said from what you hear, have you read some interviews that he's done? You don't feel he's giving you the credit you deserve?
I know, I have friends at places that he's been going and training at and stuff, and I was out in California the night before the Matt Hughes-George St. Pierre fight, and he was out there. So, when I'm out there, I'm talking to people, and people tend to just like to give out information. I'm not going to name any names.
Yeah.
But, he certainly thinks or doesn't think anything of me. And I think that a lot of people, the people that aren't hardcore mixed martial arts fanatics, people that don't follow everything in the game, everybody remembers, the Marcus Davis boxer who fought Joe Stevenson on the show, got picked up, had his shoulder dislocated, and just got elbowed until I lost that fight. That's not who I am now. And every time I fought since then, I've just gotten a little better and a little better, a little more confident, a little more seasoned as far as being in the cage. I know Shoni Carter has like 100 MMA fights. If you took all my boxing, kickboxing, K1, MMA, all that stuff, and you wrapped it up, I've got well over 100 myself. So, I don't think his experience is really going to matter in this. And the biggest thing is will Shoni Carter show up in tip-top physical shape? Because I will be, And as everybody, you know, if anybody got to watch the fight on UFC On Demand and listen to the commentating from Joe Rogan, you know, all Joe Rogan kept saying was he couldn't believe how great a shape I was in, how much different physically I looked than when I was on the show. And then when I took when I got forced pets on the ground and I started grounding and pounding them, and I was nonstop, you know, hands. You know, once again came up the fact that I was not going to get tired, and that's going to happen in this, and that is that I will come forward throwing big shots, backing Shoney up, and if he's not in shape, I'm going to wear him down, and you know, I'll catch him and I'll knock him out.
Marcus, how do you prepare for someone like Shoney Carter, who's really still very very enigmatic fighter? He has lots of different disciplines that he's being is very very adequate in, but still his fighting style is very very eccentric. So how do you prepare for someone who you know is going to give you looks you've probably never seen before?
Well, it's a good question. It's actually a fairly simple answer. There is only one range, honestly, that Shoney Carter is any better than I am at, and that's the chest-to-chest kind of Greco-type range with his throws and whatnot. Other than that, punching range, kicking range, and even grappling range, he poses absolutely no threat to me. And as far as his, you know, his oddball, herky-jerky style, you know, switching left hand, right hand, doing whatever it is that he does, I'm training for Shoney Carter to, you know, just go in there and not expect anything. I'm not going into this fight like waiting for that spinning back fist, because when you just sit there and you wait too long and it doesn't come, you're not paying attention and you're not catching great opportunities to you know, to hurt your opponent. Likewise, when I first got in and I fought Joe Stevenson, you know, I kept waiting for the shot. I don't do that anymore. I go out and I create things, and that's what I will do with Shoney Carter. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to, you know, create openings for myself, not sit back and wait for Shoney to do his, you know, put his little performance on and the stuff that he does. So, you know, my plan with this is the only thing that I'm just going to be conscious of is making sure that Shoney gets no closer to me than a collar tie. I won't let him get chest to chest, because like the Pets fight, if anybody had seen when Force Pets fought Sammy Morgan, every time they got belly to belly or chest to chest, Sammy went a flying. So I knew that could possibly happen in my fight with him, so I trained specifically so that Pets could not get to that range, and he never did. We were either I had him in my plum, or as everybody else calls it, the Muay Thai clinch, or I had the collar tie on him, collar tie, and I was dirty boxing. So that's kind of the same thing that I'm going to do in the Shoney Carter fight, except I'm going to be a lot more aggressive with Shoney Carter, where, you know, and I can, like I said, I can pretty much be comfortable whether I'm, you know, moving around, going forward, backward. It won't matter with Shoney, where it did with Forrest Pets, I had to make sure that I backed him up.
Now, you mentioned the win over Forrest Pets, Marcus, and you won that fight by guillotine choke. After you lost to Melvin Guillard by TKO due to cut, you've won six in a row, returning successfully to the UFC. What did that mean for you, Marcus, to get back in the UFC, fighting out of the organization, stringing together some wins? What did it mean for you to take out Pets by guillotine choke? And the second part to that question is, who have you been training with? Is it the same camp, and have you been working on your ground skills more?
Well, okay. First off, it was, you know, a huge win. Force Pets was a huge win. I was a big underdog. A buddy of mine bet $100 on me, won 416. So,
oh, nice.
He was kind of happy. But, I was a big underdog. I don't think anybody really thought that I was going to win that by the way that Force Pets handled Sam Morgan. And everybody thought I was just a one-dimensional fighter. And so it's a huge win, and I'm happy to be back in the UFC. That's where I think I belong, and I want to stay and finish up my career anyways with the UFC. And as far as fights, my last six fights have all been wins, and five out of the six have all been wins.
Submission. Yeah.
So you look, you'll see an arm bar on there, you see a neck crank, you see a couple of guillotines, you know. Like I said, my ground game, which was almost, I'm not going to say it was non-existent, but almost non-existent before, is, you know, come so far. And, you know, I've gone out after I did the show. I went out to George Gergel's for a while, and I stayed right in with George in his apartment, trained with George and Rich. And then I've done a lot of traveling. The show opened up doors and opportunities for me to travel with to train with all kinds of different people. And, I wouldn't say that my grappling style is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or it's, wrestling or whatever. I just think that, I've taken things that work, and I have solid foundation of the basics, and and because I have a solid foundation, I'm able to build a very big, strong house on that, and that's what I've done with my mixed martial arts career. Now, I already had the stand-up game. Now, in those fights, people that didn't see the fights that I won, I shot in, I did takedowns and throws, I did submissions, I dominated the ground game, because I needed to get time in the cage, on the mat, on the ground, and feel comfortable with it. And I feel very comfortable with it. And with Force Pets, I knew that when I did get him on the ground and he was able to get the body lock and I was in his guard, I knew that when he opened his guard that if I had gone to half guard that he was going to use the underhooks to be able to get out to his feet. And I planned, and I always train for when that does happen, to put the whizzer in, which is the overhook, and hook his arm, and control the back of the head usually. And as they start to get up, as long as they get up and their hands aren't touching the mat or not one knee, I'll start kneeing them in the face. And if they turn in towards me, then I go to the guillotine choke. So the way the scramble happened with him is that when he scrambled out, he immediately pushed me up against the cage, but left his neck exposed. I had hooked him up and then pummeled my left hand back onto the inside so I could have it without the arm in. I could have choked him out with the arm in, I had an opportunity to pummel in and get just his neck. So, obviously I trained for that. That doesn't just happen. Mm-hmm.
So at what fight? At what point in your career, Marcus, did you gain the confidence to just not merely grapple in order to defend and sort of defend submissions, etc., but to go on the offensive, to try submissions yourself and to be active on the ground looking to end the fight?
Well, after the Joe Stevenson fight, I wanted to concentrate mainly on the ground. I didn't have to concentrate anymore standing up, so I spent a lot of time on ground training. But the problem was that I had received an injury when I fought Joe, where I had separated my shoulder and sprained my AC joint, and then the clavicle, the tendons and the muscles that hold the clavicle to the shoulder had been strained. So when I got, I had the injury for 9 months, and I ended up fighting Melvin about 4 or 5 months after that injury had happened. So I still had the injury. Then I decided after the Goliath fight that I was not going to do this anymore, that I was going to make sure that I was 100% healthy before I fought again. So I took about 4 months off. All I did for that entire time was work on my ground game, work on, my takedowns, my takedown defense, and then, just being able to scramble and move on the ground, and then submissions come later, but I just worked mostly on being very comfortable on the ground. So in my next fight, we chose to fight a striker, a Thai boxer, a kid he wasn't going to pose a threat to me standing, but I didn't want to stand with him. I wanted to get him on the ground so I could get comfortable and try out some of these new tools. And I ended up submitting him in like 1:30. And then,
so did you find that shoulder injury, if it's a bad shoulder separation, it's amazing how much of your strength is depleted. Did you actually find that that is helpful learning when you when you're learning technique on the ground, not to be able to muscle out of things and just torque out of things and overwork things. Do you find that actually beneficial?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one big thing that I did learn, and I preach all the time to my guys, is that on the ground, it has nothing to do with moving him. It has to do with moving you. And, you know, it's not going to matter if the guy's, you know, 10 pounds less than you or 50 pounds heavier than you. The name of the game in grappling is just always being able to create space for yourself. Make it so that you can move you know, be good enough that as soon as you create space to quickly occupy that space yourself before he'll occupy it. And that's what I did. I just worked on that kind of stuff. It's that simple. I mean, the ground game really is that simple, is being able to move yourself and quickly take advantage of that space that you create, whether it's to scramble out or to do a submission or sweep or whatever it is that you need to do. And that's what I worked on. I worked on just moving me without being all, you know, trying to force anything or muscle or use that bum shoulder or any other injuries that I had during I was training. Everybody knows I happen to get injured all the time. But, anyways, yeah, it really helped actually. Like you said, I think it helped me even develop my ground game better because I had no choice.
Now, Marcus, my final question for you is in regards to your boxing background. You had a very impressive record, 22-1-2, if I believe it, if I've got that right. And you know, I wanted to hear your thoughts and hear your perceptions of the status of boxing currently in comparison to mixed martial arts. Do you get the sense, Marcus, that the powers that be, so to speak, that surround boxing are genuinely concerned with the popularity explosion of mixed martial arts? And as well, do you think that we might at some future point, as money starts to get better in mixed martial arts, do you think we might actually see more boxers transferring into mixed martial arts?
Those are all real good questions. I actually, I should be called the Nostradamus of boxing and MMA, because the first time I saw the UFC back in 1993, I just, you know, I fell in love with it, and then after it started to become mainstream, well, when I say mainstream, I just mean more accepted, not to the point that it is now, but
yeah,
more accepted, like 1999-ish. In 1999, I actually was right in the year 2000 that I actually gave the speech, but I turned everybody that was handling me in boxing, whether it was my, you know, my trainers and my manager and stuff, I turned to them and I said, you know what? I'm not going to box anymore. I think I'm going to try out this mixed martial arts stuff. And everybody looked at me like I was insane. They're like, there's no money in it. It's going to be shut down. There's not, you know, it's not a sport, you know. And everybody was telling me this, and I'm like, I'm telling you guys, this is going to be the biggest thing. It's going to come. It's history repeats itself. You know, the day of the, you know, gladiators is coming back. And I'm doing this, you know, I don't care, I'm doing this. And I just walked away, and everybody thought I was nuts. And it's nice to sit back, and it's funny to bump into them now, after I've done the show, and after I've fought in the UFC, and everything's going so well for me, that I get to bump into them, and I get to look at them and go, ah, what'd I tell you? And then, you know, Bob Arum having to go out, and Bob Arum says, Bob Arum's the second biggest promoter ever in boxing. Bob Arum says, UFC is now, bigger and better, in boxing for the viewing audience. And then he says, it should be. And you know why? Because they put great fights on. They put, great fighters against great fighters. Nobody stays undefeated. Everybody risks everything. Where in boxing, they don't do that.
Yeah.
They hide. You don't get to. It's rarely, and when you do get to see the great fights, those are the big multi-million-dollar fights. But along the way, you know, everybody tries to fight cans, and that was me too. You know, I in boxing, I was like, man, I want to have great fights. I'm a fighter because because I love to fight. I'm not in this because of anything else. You know, obviously, you know, I need to get paid so I can live. But I'm into, I fight because I love great fights. And that's what I wanted, and that's why I switched, and that's why I'm in the UFC. You know, boxing is, who wants to go, it's not fun to go into a fight and to not be excited or not fear your opponent or whatever, you know. And you just go in and just kind of walk through. If that is the kind of fights that that somebody wants, then they're not a fighter. A real fighter takes a fight that there's a huge risk that he could win, lose, or whatever, and you just try to rise to the occasion, and that's what it's about. And
yeah.
That's what, you know, MMA provides, this risk. No matter who you are, you know, there's five different ways, five different ranges, punching, kicking, trapping, grappling, and ground fighting ranges that somebody's going to be better than you at. And if he can keep you there, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's at risk. Nobody's, nobody's going to remain undefeated. And that's why I love this sport.
My last question is, why the hell isn't that your nickname? Marcus, the Nostradamus Davis.
Is there
a better nickname?
I think the Irish hand grenade is a better nickname, but Nostradamus, I don't know, that just came to me. But that's a good one.
The UFC should hire you as an ambassador, Marcus, and go out and do some media for boxing, because the way you just broke down mixed martial arts, I think would have, especially to the boxing community, you know, you always sometimes hear comments from, purported comments from people like Jim Lampley and others that are in the boxing community and still continue to really diss and disrespect mixed martial arts, and they still don't regard it as a sport. So I think the UFC would be well advised to have you as an ambassador and go out there and inform some of the boxing world that, you know, and look at you as a perfect example, a well-accomplished boxer having a successful career in mixed martial arts.
Well, thank you. If you can convince them to do that, I'll definitely do it for them. I mean, I would love to do something like that and promote this sport. I love this sport. I might have started as a boxer, but that's just because mixed martial arts wasn't around at that time. If I had been, I would have been a mixed martial arts fighter.
You should also try and bring back that technique of wearing only one boxing glove.
It's an MMA fight. I think that's
got miles to go.
Let me tell you something. Even back then, in 1993, when he wore that glove in there, I went, this guy's an idiot. So, I didn't, even though it was a new sport, I was a boxer, I was going, what is he doing? So, yeah, no.
Well, we appreciate you coming on the show, Marcus. We know it's been a busy weekend for you, Thanksgiving and all, and so we appreciate it, and we know you got to get back to training to prepare for Mr. Shoni Carter next week, I guess, December 13th. So, Marcus, thanks again.
Great. No, thanks
for taking time out of your holiday.
Oh, no, thanks, guys.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the US, FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. And when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you.
Hey, guys. Jason Anthony McDonald, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Joining Full Contact Fighter now is Peter Martel, who is from the Extreme Cage Combat Mixed Martial Arts promotion, who are putting on a show this weekend, December 2nd. Extreme Cage Combat 4 Fury. And Peter, I guess my first question for you is, how are ticket sales doing?
Ticket sales are going fairly well. Better than the last show, which is good. Last show did a couple thousand. We've got the added bonus of having 30,000 or 40,000 students in town right now, so it's not too bad.
And tell us a little bit about the venue. Where is ECC 4 going to be held?
It's going to be the Halifax Forum again. It's where we held two other shows, one on April 29th and one on July 22nd. It's a good venue. Al Driscoll, the general manager, is a great guy to work with.
Now, I'm going to ask you a little bit about your previous shows and how ECC came about, et cetera, and how it's been received in Halifax in general. But first, let's just break down the card for this weekend a little bit. The main event, you've got Roger Hollett taking on Ray Penny. And from what I've read and in talking to you a bit before, it sounds like Roger Hollett's a local fighter, and there's a little bit of hype behind Roger.
Yeah, Roger is a local fighter from Halifax, and he is very talented, a lot of skills, great stand-up. He's got knockout power in both hands and both feet, good takedowns, good takedown defense, good on the ground, superb conditioning, you know, tough, great heart. You've got everything that, you know, you need to be a mixed martial artist, all the tools and all the intangibles that you can't teach people he has.
And Roger's 2-0 going into this fight, and he's taking on a guy named Ray Penny who's 1-0, so maybe tell us a little bit about his opponent, Penny.
Well, Ray actually fought in our first show, ECC1, and he had a pretty spectacular knockout over his opponent. He fought at as a heavyweight. He was, I believe, 235, and he fought a guy who was 245 and knocked him out in the first round. You know, I've got a good photograph of the guy lying spread eagle, unconscious, with Ray jumped up in the cage with one arm raised in the air, and his opponent still unconscious. It's a lot of power behind Ray, and he's coming down to 205 to fight Roger, so he should be quite a force.
Now, I see that Fabio Holanda is no longer going to be on the card. Fabio Holanda, for some of our listeners who don't know him, we've had Fabio on the show, is one of the head instructors behind Brazilian Top Team Canada, very talented jiu-jitsu practitioner. He was supposed to be fighting Sean Kreisa. So am I correct? Fabio is no longer on the card?
No, Fabio is no longer on the card. He had some personal issues to deal with. So, yeah, unfortunately, he won't be on the card.
So you brought in Samuel Guillet, who's also from BTT Canada. He's got a record 4-3, and people who are familiar with TKO have probably seen Samuel fight a few times. So tell us a little bit about that matchup, Sean Kreisa versus Samuel Guillet.
Well, they're both very talented grapplers, and we'd hope to have the grappling matchup between Kreisa and Hollanda, but now it's not going to be, again, a grappling match, but just for Fabio Hollanda, I think will be for people who enjoy high level grappling, it should be a good match.
And then you've got another local fighter, Jason McKay, who's coming in, and he's also Team Titans. And I wanted to ask you about the Team Titan in a second here, but Jason McKay is going to be he's 3-0, and he's going to be taking on Daniel Grandmaison. And Jason got quite a bit of exposure, Peter, the other night on the Scores Hardcore Fighting Championship program. They showed his fight against Jacob McDonald, which took place at Apex earlier in the year. And that was a great fight, back-and-forth action. Have people been talking about Jason a little bit, more so because his one of those fights of his was shown nationally on Canadian television?
You know what? I'm not sure that that fight received the exposure down here that it should have. That was a great fight, a hard-fought victory for Jason. You know, three-round unanimous decision. Really, it hasn't had a lot of publicity down here for him. I know there's a newspaper interview that's going to be taking place at Titans this evening with Jason. Jason's very talented. Like we say, he's 3-0. And he's in for a tough match this time on ECC4. This is going to be a big test for him. This guy he's fighting is big and coming down in weight. Jason is small and having a hard time holding weight to fight at that weight, so he's got a disadvantage there, and this guy's tough. So this is one of those watershed fights for Jason. I think if he wins, it's going to say a lot for him.
And then just a quick survey of the rest of the undercard for ECC4. Any matchups there, Peter, that fans should really look out for?
TJ Grantall is exciting. TJ started with Titans, and when Titans moved to Halifax, he stayed in Dartmouth, didn't have transportation. Now he's with Fit Plus, and TJ's exciting. We had, Matt Dukowski is a new guy out of Titans, and he's very talented athletically, but, good ground game, good takedowns. So I guess, unfortunately, Jake McKenzie is no longer in the card. Jake is, again, a fighter of the Titans and extremely talented on the ground, just an amazing, amazing grappler, great takedowns, stand-up's pretty good. But he's been sidelined with an injury, so I'm sorry to say that one will take place. I was looking forward to that one a lot. But there's a good matchups, I think. We've tried to match styles, so we're hoping to see some good action.
And throughout the interview, we've been mentioning Team Titans a little bit and some of the fighters. And Peter, you're one of the instructors involved with Team Titans. So tell us a little bit about that fight team that's out of Halifax, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Titans is located at the corner of Titus and Evans Avenue in Halifax. There's three people that train there, myself and Kevin Taylor. We kind of bridge the gap. Kevin's more of a grappler, brown belt under Henzo Gracie, and really involved a lot in the sport aspect of the gi game. I'm more of a no-gi, mixed martial artist type guy, again, brown belt under Henzo Gracie. And Robert Walker is, again, more of a mixed martial artist, but his specialty is Muay Thai. So we've got a great instructor and a core with the Muay Thai, the mixed martial arts, and the sport jiu-jitsu, a good combination. And, you know, great work ethic. We really kill our guys when we put them through hell.
And, you know, when you talk about the history of mixed martial arts in Canada, I think people often, first comes to mind is Quebec, of course, one of the pioneers in bringing mixed martial arts to the public in Canada, and then Alberta has been on the agenda, mixed martial arts agenda, for quite some time, and then now slowly but surely we're seeing it kind of spread out throughout Ontario, British Columbia, pretty much across Canada as a whole. So maybe tell us a little bit about the history of mixed martial arts in Halifax. From what I understand, you guys were one of the first organizations to try to get something going from just teaching mixed martial arts, and then of course you are the team that's responsible for bringing mixed martial arts as a professional event to Halifax as well.
Well, yeah, we started probably 10 or 12 years ago training and teaching, and you know, we were probably lucky enough to realize that, you know, you had to evolve in martial arts to you know, to stay on top. And, you know, that's one of the things that's it's ironic that the Gracies, particularly Hoyce, opened the public's eyes to the importance of grappling in mixed martial arts. And for a while, grappling dominated. And, you know, it evolved. And then we had people who could grapple and could, and, you know, who could defend takedowns and were good strikers. And then, you know, kind of swung back. Wrestlers dominated for a while. And now it seems to be the striker who can hold a takedown for a while. And now, really, it's getting into the realm of people who can do both. Mm-hmm. And we were lucky enough, like I say, that we had a good grappling background. We hooked up with Rob Walker, who was a great striker. And we were able to put together a good mixed martial arts program in Halifax. And, you know, we've had some good guys. And Kyle Stanford trained with us. And he, at least he's 3-1. He was going to Quebec to fight because we didn't have any fights here. You know, so... And that's the reason, you know, Jason McDonald left 10, 12 years ago to move up west, because, you know, he wanted to fight and there was nothing here.
Yeah. And how has the city welcomed mixed martial arts, the professional side of it, your event? I know that your first event, it was attended extremely well, had thousands of people attend. How has the media started to understand a little bit more about mixed martial arts, Peter? And just in general, what has the public's reception been in regards to the ECC?
Well, that's funny because the very first one, the media basically crucified the event. They were, you know, we had people from other martial arts, taekwondo, amateur boxing, things like that, say that it was just a legalized dog fight and people were going to die and there was scratching and biting and hair pulling and growing strikes and, you know, people making statements that were absolutely untrue and really showed their ignorance for mixed martial arts. A lot of the reports that were written in the paper by reporters who knew next to nothing about it were very, very negative. But the first show went so well that it opened a lot of their eyes, and I had many reporters come and do interviews afterward and say, you know, you really opened our eyes, you taught us a lot. And now the stories we're writing are quite positive. They treat it like any other sport. It's reported objectively, this guy's fighting this guy, it's taking place then. Just the sensationalism that sells the papers and gets people watching news is gone. Now they're actually just reporting what it is rather than trying to, you know, scare the public. And, you know, those who like it, you know, really like it. And people, you know, there's always going to be sick in the population no matter what, you know, you say or, you know, how you try to show it. They're not going to like it. But generally,
weren't familiar with it and, you know, have seen it. They're starting to come around, becoming more and more interested. I talk to a lot of people, say, oh, yeah, I gotta go see it. I haven't seen one yet, but I really want to go see it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's really gaining widespread acceptance.
And you mentioned Jason McDonald, who, of course, is from the Maritimes, from Nova Scotia originally, and he moved out west and is headed to the UFC now and will be fighting for the second time in the UFC. You had Jason on several of your cards fighting. Are people somewhat familiar with the name Jason McDonald now? Do they realize that there's a UFC fighter who's originally from Nova Scotia competing now in that organization?
You know what, I really don't think they do. Like, the people who are, you know, in the circle of people that I know realize.
Yeah.
You know, they say, hey, wasn't that guy the guy who fought in your card? But to the public at large, they don't realize, you know, how big a deal it is to have a Nova Scotian fighting in, you know, the premier mixed martial arts event in North America. You know, he's made it to the top, and he's, you know, gone a long road and done a lot of hard training and taken a lot of hard fights. You know, he'll fight anybody, and, you know, he's done amazing things. And, you know, you gotta give the guy all the respect in the world, and he's talented, and, I really think that it's a shame that he's not getting more press coverage in Nova Scotia with his strong.
Yeah. And on that same thread, as far as the UFC, I understand that you guys have amended some of your rules or applied to amend some of your rules to make the rules for the UFC more in line with the UFC?
Yeah, we originally, you know, wrote the rules for mixed martial arts in Nova Scotia with, you know, the fact in mind that, well, by and large, a lot of the public just wasn't ready for it. So we softened a little bit. And some of the things we took out were like elbows and stuff like that, being a big one. And after, you know, like I said, after the negativity died down, people realized that this was a legitimate sport. We approached the boxing authority and President Mickey McDonald and said, referee and Judge Hubert Earl and explained about elbows. And they were quite receptive. And they realized that that's the standard, that's the norm. And for our athletes to compete on an international stage, they have to be training with the international standards. So we submitted a proposal or the rules, and they've accepted them.
Oh, okay. So there will be elbows allowed for this weekend's fights?
There will be elbows.
Sorry, go ahead.
So there were always elbows allowed, but just not to the head.
Oh.
Now there's elbow strikes allowed to the head.
And the ECC currently takes place in a cage?
In a cage.
Okay. And with that, is there is it the same size octagon? Did you have to work out a deal with the UFC to allow the use of the octagon, or is it a different size?
Well, no, we have actually have the cage specifically constructed, and it's a hexagon, six sizes, because
right.
I believe the octagon was protected.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we've got a good size cage, hence the name Extreme Cage Combat.
Oh,
it
yeah.
was almost Extreme Cage Combat with a ring, because the cage only arrived 2 days before our very first fight. It's tied up at the borders. We were lucky.
Yeah, I guess having a cage would be kind of a necessity. It's a necessity considering the name.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to Jason McDonald and Chris Lieben fighting.
Yeah, do you have a pick on that? Of course, Jason McDonald took out Ed Herman, which is one of Chris Lieben's former training partners, and I'm sure that I know Chris still does some training at Team Quest. Do you have a pick on that fight, Peter?
I think Jason's going to take him down and beat him on the ground.
Yeah.
Jason's got talent on his feet and on the ground. Lieben's more talent on his feet, less on the ground. And I think he's going to lose on the ground to Jason Donald.
Well, Peter, we appreciate you coming on the show. I know you've probably got a busy week ahead of you doing promotions, etc., for the ECC Extreme Cage Combat 4 taking place December 2nd this weekend in Halifax. Peter, thanks a lot for coming on the show, and best of luck this weekend.
Thank you for having me. You have a good day.
Hey guys, Kelsey Mowat here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Mowat must be presented in business letter format and aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Mowat before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
Hey, this is Bill the Butcher Mahood. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Thank you for returning to Full Contact Fighter Radio. And Brendan, some interesting comments from Marcus Davis and Peter Martel. And you know, the one thing that struck me in the Marcus Davis interview, aside from the breakdown of his upcoming fight with Shoni Carter, which was interesting in its own right, I want to talk a little bit about his comments when he was discussing the differences between boxing and mixed martial arts and how the boxing community has, generally speaking, not been too welcoming of mixed martial arts and its success, which makes sense. You know, it's kind of cutting into their dollars. But, you know, he was talking about Bob Arum making the comments in regards to mixed martial arts being successful because of the matchmaking that's involved in our sport, and you know, basically saying that these fighters go up against great fighters, especially once they get to the higher levels of the sport, almost every time, and you don't necessarily see that in boxing. You can see, you know, most boxers who have a future ahead of them are usually protected until their records get up into the 25-0 range, maybe even 30-0 range, sometimes even higher, until they meet or fight another boxer who can even give them a run for their money. And in mixed martial arts, that's not necessarily the case.
No, I think a lot of guys, depending on who, if you have a manager, I think your career takes shape, and that's part of a manager's job, I think, and for better or for worse, your career takes shape along certain, along certain lines, and that if you have a good manager, they're not going to put you in on a fight that you're guaranteed to lose, and kind of build you up along the way, you know, getting you good fights in order to build up your skill, but at the same time, you know, getting you in fights that you have a chance to win, because there's no use fighting fights that you don't have a chance to win.
Yeah.
So I think the more and more, the earlier that fighters get management and get people looking out for their interests, the less and less dumb fights that they'll take, and they won't get those losses. But at the same time, you're always going to have guys who will just fight at the drop of a hat and fight at the last minute and get thrown into here or there. And I think you build up a certain amount of credibility doing that, and you certainly build up a lot of, you can build up some favors with promoters and stuff like that. But at the end, when people look at your record, you know, you could be a really decent fighter and have kind of a sketchy record. So, but I think that's becoming, I think that's recognized now in MMA more and more. And, you know, there are very, very few high level fighters who have undefeated records. Everyone's got some losses, and it's good that you can come back with that. So Kang is a perfect example, right? So his record stunk, a few years ago, and now when he's one of the top tier fighters, and so no one looks at him and says, "Oh, his record's crap. He's got, you know, however many losses he's got." You know,
yeah.
They sort of take the snapshot of what you are now, and that's great. You don't see that in boxing, I don't think.
And there certainly are a few fighters out there who have, say, made it to the UFC, and when you actually break down their record and do a great deal of inspection on who they've beaten, there might be a lot of guys they've taken out that had records of 1-4, 2-8, 4-4, or whatever. So to say that some fighters aren't somewhat, nursed a little bit into the UFC or into bigger fights, that's not necessarily always the case. But certainly mixed martial arts is unique in the sense that when you get to such events like Pride or the IFL or UFC, the bigger promotions that I guess sort of transcend the local promotion, if we can use that term, then certainly you have a chance of going up against a fighter with a comparable record, comparable skills. And you're right, I mean, most guys won't take a fight they have no chance to win at that point, but it's certainly something that makes mixed martial arts, you know, that much better than boxing. And I do kind of fear as we move forward with mixed martial arts and the trend towards popularity continues or increased popularity, I think every fan has to be somewhat concerned that we will start to see that model of boxing pay-per-view events where essentially you're paying $50 for one fight and there's next to no undercard that anyone really cares about, and hopefully we never see that happen in mixed martial arts.
Yeah, I think boxing experienced what you would call, they call in the stock market a correction, you know, a couple decades ago, right around Tyson's popularity, the height of his popularity. A lot of the pay-per-view money was coming in just because of the hype surrounding one fighter. And MMA, you see, I think MMA is just simply a better product. You know, it's a more sensational product. It's a more dynamic product. So you can build cards, and even if you see a fight with two guys who you don't even really know, if it's a good fight, it'll be a quality product that people can watch it. Whereas, you know, see a 15-round fight in boxing, whether it's like, if it's even a kind of a good fight, I think general people can lose interest in something like that. So I think the more and more fighters become commodities, the more and more they have to look out for stuff like that. But, you know, even a couple of years ago, if Dana White or Joe Silva calls you up and says, you know, a week before the fight, you want to come in and fight one of our big guns, we've had a fighter drop out, you know, a lot of fighters that we've talked to say, what do you say when the UFC calls you up? You go. You can't say no.
Yeah.
You know, you can't say no and, no, I don't want to, I'm protecting my record, and no, I'm not ready to go. You just go and fight, and in a sense, if there's only two outfits to fight for, you don't alienate one of them by saying, no, I don't want to take the fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they were building up, you know, a lot of fighters that we've talked to build up not only credibility, but had built up, you know, goodwill and good faith. But I think the more and more as fighters, more and more fighters become commodities where your record is important and you can go to, you know, one of five or six different ones, you might not be so willing to take a fight at the last minute.
Yeah, and please, you know, I don't want people to misperceive what I'm saying in the sense that there's certain things about the mixed martial arts model that I don't care for. You know, the fact that the undercard is still a big part of mixed martial arts, that there's still great, interesting matchups on the undercard, and that you're usually guaranteed, say, four or five really good fights on the average mixed martial arts card with fighters that have, you know, recognizable names, etc. That's great. But at the same time, you know, I've always been the biggest proponent, we've talked about this on the show ad nauseum, about the fact that we'd all, every mixed martial arts fan would like to see the day where the, you know, at the end of the day, it's about the fighters and not the promotion, and then hence we could see some of the matchups that we've wanted to see for years, and of course, you know, there's the obvious ones, Vanderlei Silva, Chuck Liddell, etc. But, so there's certain things about the boxing model that I like, and there's certain things about the mixed martial arts model of promoting that I like.
Yeah, I certainly agree, you know, and the one thing you want to see, I think, in mixed martial arts, the one thing you want to see is fighters who become professional fighters a year or two into their careers can actually train as professionals, so they can train full-time, they have enough money to devote enough time and energy into fighting, so you see good product, and this is one of the things, I was at a smaller show on the weekend, and I think the time has passed where in a promotion you see guys go out there, you know, in gas after a round and a half. You know, you just don't want to see that anymore. And at one time it was probably acceptable in the UFC and that was part of whether a fighter is a good fighter or not. But that's one of those kinds of variables that you don't, that shouldn't matter anymore. Like, you expect everyone to be at a certain level and can fight hard for three rounds. And I think that's important. So when the sport gets up to that level, which I think it's very, very close to right now, then it's going to, you know, things are going to start going over the top.
And you mentioned the small show you attended, that was King of the Cage Amplified, held in Edmonton. And so, Brendan, what was your overall thoughts on the fights? And one of the things I wanted to ask you about is there seems like there's a lot of threads on some of the Canadian mixed martial arts forums discussing the poor reffing. Did you see that from your vantage point? Were you aware of the fact that it's, according to some of these fans, there were some bad calls from the refs?
Yeah, there were some real... it's tough to be a ref, right? Because the best possible outcome of a well refereed fight is no one notices you. You know,
yeah.
So it's kind of you do the best possible job you can. It's anticlimactic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now that being said, there was a couple real sort of boner moves. So you saw a fight being stopped during a flurry when. One fighter was getting pummeled and his mouth guard flew out, so the fight was stopped.
I wanted to ask about that one, because that was Jared Kilkenny versus Tim Haig.
Yeah.
Jared Kilkenny was regarded as one of the better up-and-coming heavyweights in Canada from Lethbridge, and apparently he had Tim Haig in a lot of trouble, and I don't want to take away Haig winning the fight. I don't want to take anything away from him. But, yeah, apparently Kilkenny was winning early in the first round, had him stunned, and he lost his mouth guard, and then the referee stopped the action.
And it was during a flurry too. It wasn't, you know, they hadn't clenched into a stalemate, and Kilkenny, that was a tough fight for him because he was really dominating and he looked really good, and basically lost by taking a bad. And these guys are big guys, right? So he lost by letting a bad punch slip in, and he was stunned, and then the fight was finished, but. Yeah, it's just one of those things you don't want to see because Haig is getting flurried, mouthpiece flies out and doesn't even fly out into the ring, but flies out of the ring. So they stopped the fight for a long time, and he was gassed during that time too. So they stopped the fight for a long time to look for his mouthpiece. The ring girls are running around looking for it. You know, they finally wash it off. Like, I don't want to say a specific amount of time, but a long time. You know, I'm going to say a few good minutes, like almost longer than a round rest, the mouthpiece comes back in. And, you know, I think that was just maybe a mistake, and you'd like to see referees err on the side of caution, but that simply can't be a rule, because every time you're getting flurried, you spit out your mouthpiece, right? So I think that was a big mistake, that probably one of the ones that turned the tide. The Jason Day fight,
Yeah, didn't Francois apparently tap? I mean, I guess it didn't have any effect on the results, but
no,
Dave told me that Ricardo Francois tapped, and the referee didn't even notice.
He did. And, you know, unfortunately, I think the rule isn't bigger, in the UFC, that you don't stop fighting when a fighter taps you. You stop fighting when the referee intercedes.
Yeah.
And I think just, you know, the way that you train, it's just built up that you have goodwill towards your opponents, and if they tap you, it's really an honor system, right? It's saying, I submit. And, unfortunately, if it was true that his opponent did tap him and then saw a chance not to admit to it, then that's it's embarrassing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the referee didn't stop the fight, so it doesn't matter on Dave's behalf whether he, you know, whether the guy tapped or not. If the referee doesn't stop the fight, you keep on fighting, and that's the way it is, and that's the way it ought to be, right?
Right. And for those people listening, Day did end up winning. He got a guillotine choke in shortly after and did win the fight.
And I think the pace of things as well. There was a lot of stalled work on the ground that didn't get stood up. That didn't get stood up quickly enough for my liking. And then there was a couple of dominant positions on the ground that did get side control that got stood up. So that was a little bit inconsistent, but I've actually seen these guys ref before, and I've never actually noticed those kinds of inconsistencies. So maybe it was just a bad night on their behalf, but what are you going to do? You know, they're only going to get better by watching more, Edmonton Commission, and this is governed by Edmonton, it's not a provincial thing, the Edmonton Fighting Commission or Boxing Commission, they have to have mechanisms in place, as does every commission, in order to educate and better the referee. So they have to look at their tapes, and that's how things get better, right? So you can't just hope for the best the next time around. There have to be, if you're gonna take responsibility for commissioning and sanctioning events, then you also have to take responsibility for the education of your referees and for them to work for the betterment of the sport and for the betterment of their performance. So hopefully that's all in place, you know.
And on that card, I mean, when you look at the undercard, like I know in the main event, Warpath took out Wade Hamilton, but on the undercard, and we talked about a couple fights, but was there any other honorable mentions that you wanted to make?
I think the folks that really popped out, one young guy from Lethbridge, they have a really good school in Lethbridge, they call it the Canadian Martial Arts
Center, yeah.
The Canadian Martial Arts Center.
Yeah.
What's the guy, Tavernini, Jesse?
Justin Tavernini.
Justin Tavernini, yeah, fought a really good, he was the guy that really stood out amongst all of the fighters as someone who watches a lot of fighting, saying that this guy has the potential to make it to the bigs given a little bit more work, because he was just a very dynamic fighter and he flowed very well, very fluent stand up, very fluent transitions on the ground. So that's one guy that stood out. They actually looked to be very, very dominant, and the last time I saw him fight was against Victor Valnaki, and he didn't look that great in that fight, but he had a very convincing victory against Francois. It was real. It looked like a real mismatch. It certainly wasn't on paper, but they took him out. The main event, Warpath. What happened at the very, very beginning of the whole event? Warpath came out to say a few words, and you're like, "Oh, what's going on here?" And then some music starts playing, you know, WWF style, and I think Ken Kupsch is his name, came out, he was the promoter,
yeah,
and said, "Warpath, we couldn't get a Canadian to fight you, and so we had to bring in this other guy," and all of a sudden this music plays a la WWF, and Bill Mahood jumps in the ring, grabs the mic, you know, "What are you talking about? I'll fight him anytime, da 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 da," and he's
nice.
Like, "Well, maybe we'll have to set this fight up for Freedom Fight," which is their next promotion in Quebec, so who knows, I guess that'll be a fight that's made.
And what about Victor Valmaki's younger brother, Danny, who's just recently started fighting professionally, I think within the last year? How did Danny Valmaki look in his fight, Brendan?
He looked fairly competent on the ground. He looked like he was stalling a bit in his stand-up. There's a little bit, I don't know if they were just, if they just didn't work well together, standing, but his stand-up was a little, he was a little apprehensive, you could say. I don't know if he got tired right away, but he looked very competent on the ground. You know, he's very well trained.
Was there any doubt in your mind that he had won the fight when it went to the judge's decision? He was fighting Dan Miller. That was his
No, I think he definitely won the fight. There's no doubt about that. But not a real stand-up, not a real stand-up performance on his behalf, and I think he recognized that at the end of the fight as well.
Yeah. And then Jacob McDonald versus Elmer Waterhead was one of the fights that I was excited, and I hope I get to see it somehow. Jacob McDonald is kind of known for a real kind of bringing aggressive style, and so is Elmer Waterhead. And that fight apparently was quite the battle. I saw a couple picks, and it looked like both guys are bloodied up a little bit. How was that fight?
It was actually really nice back and forth, but Waterhead really dominated that fight, and I was not particularly surprised by that. He had some really great low kicks, and he had the only thing he lacked in that fight was some clear knockout power, because he had McDonald on the ropes several times, and he just couldn't finish him. So I'm not sure whether he doesn't have that in his hands, really doesn't have that potential to finish the fight, but there were numerous opportunities for Waterhead to finish the fight. He himself was never in trouble in that fight. So it was basically a real punishing fight, and McDonald certainly got the worst of it. So I think Waterhead's definitely the real deal. With that one thing lacking, I don't think, it didn't look like he had the power to get the knockout or the knockdown. So we'll see. Maybe that will turn around a little bit for him. But that was the only thing missing from that fight. But other than that, it was a fairly good fight.
And then on the crowd side of things, I know that the weather's been pretty poor in Edmonton, and I just want to hear your thoughts on this. Ken Kopsch told me that they were guessing it was attendance around 1,500, and like I mentioned, I know the weather's been quite bad in Edmonton. But Brendan, I mean, do you think that the King of the Cage Canada is kind of, they do their promoting in a little bit different kind of style than the MFC. The MFC really focuses on trying to groom local talent. Jason McDonald, Victor Valimaki have kind of become stars, local celebrities in that sense, through the MFC. And King of the Cage Canada has promotions all over Western Canada. Do you think that's part of the reason that maybe the attendance was a little bit lower, or do you think just simply because King of the Cage Canada doesn't necessarily have the same kind of connections to just the Edmonton community, or do you think it was a fairly small attendance just on account of the weather?
Well, I think that I think first of all, because they have a fairly wide audience, and I think the audience is a little bit rougher around the edges, so they might require King of the Cage might require to bring in bigger names, and I don't think they had that. They had that in with you know, having a big fight on the card. Like King of the Cage usually have one really good fight on the card, usually bringing in fighters from the States either or wherever. And this one wasn't that. You know, the Warpath fight, I wasn't really pumped about it, and it wasn't a terrifically terrifically good fight. Although Warpath did come back, Hamilton had him on his back and was giving him a fairly good beating. And Hamilton actually, to his credit, gave up a mountain and tried to transition into a straight armbar, and Warpath swept him and basically finished him off with a few punches. But Warpath was in deep trouble. But again, not particularly dynamic fighters. I just don't like to see, you know, the big guys, they did what they were paid to do. You know, they came together and started throwing the leather. But yeah, that doesn't really crank me. So it's tough to say whether the crowd, the King of the Cage crowd, was a different crowd than the, say, for instance, the last MFC we went to. I noticed the last MFC crowd was very articulate in terms of their responses. Here was like, you know, the King of the Cage crowd, and maybe it was just where I was sitting right in front of some very, very vocal people who I wouldn't have minded turning around and, you know, giving a couple of slaps upside the head. But it was a lot of real lowbrow stuff going on.
Yeah.
So who knows? I can't imagine why the crowds would be different. But I think it's maybe a little bit, a little bit more of a popular following of King of the Cage because of their name. So maybe, you know, fans who are out to see some, out to see some blood and guts, not necessarily aficionados. That's how that crowd struck me. So, and there weren't really marquee fighters who were great technical fighters as well. So I'm not sure if that card was the greatest draw. I have to, before I forget though, the women fighting on the card were absolutely excellent. There was one woman's bout that just
Sarah Kaufman versus Misty Shear, and I believe Kaufman won versus via referee stoppage TKO.
Yeah, well, that one went over gangbusters, and they were just terrific to watch. You know, tons of gas, really good stand up, really dynamic on the ground, a lot of back and forth, and those girls were tough, and so they were real warriors, and that was I have to say that was probably the most entertaining of the fight of the night for me, and I love to see more women's MMA. Actually, I've never really paid much attention to it, just because I've never seen much, not because I've not wanted to pay attention to it. But that was really, really good, and I think the girls have a long way to a lot of potential in the sport. You know, it certainly wasn't, and it didn't look. You know, the fight looked really good in terms of technical competence. It looked really, really good. So I know there's lots of girls out there who train real hard, and have been. And there's lots of boxers and other sort of judo girls that are really well established. I'd like to see a lot of them move more into MMA, because there's a lot of talented female combatants out there that I would like to see a lot more. And they were great. You know, they had a lot of gas. The fight looked good. Really nice transitions on the ground. A lot of sweeps. Really good crisp stand up. So yeah, I have to say that was for me that was the fight of the night.
Yeah, no, I've been lucky enough to see a couple women's fights at live cards, and of course, I've seen a few on TV. So you're absolutely right; it's definitely a nice side to mixed martial arts, which is has just begun. And on that note, Brendan, we should be ending the segment. We're getting a little long here, so we'll talk to you later in the week. And we've got plenty coming up. UFC Fight Night, as I mentioned at the top of the show, is coming up. Bodog fight this weekend here in Vancouver. UFC 66 is around the corner. There's a Pride Shockwave, so plenty going on the next couple weeks. We hope you stay tuned to the show, and thanks for tuning in to Full Contact Fighter. Brendan, take care.
Bye, Kels.